my number one piece of advice is to act too good for the role. Like, it is like dating. You want to prove that you're high worth. If you're high worth, you don't respond to everyone. I never send thank you notes after interviews. I'm too busy.
Welcome back to Meeting by the Dumpster, a podcast about the messy middle of work and beyond by two colleagues turned friends. I'm Mary.
I'm Astrid. And today we have a guest with us. We are thrilled to have Susanna, a former colleague of ours. And all three of us met when we worked at the same company together. So welcome to the pod, Susanna. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So excited. We've been wanting to do this. We've been wanting to bring you on for a while, and also this topic, which we'll get into, but really excited to have you.
Yeah. I'm honored to be a guest.
As we were noodling on topic ideas, I was thinking back to my first memory of meeting you, and it was from afar. It was, I think this was before you started at the company. You came for lunch one day.
Oh, yeah.
And we were on, this company had that great.
Oh, it was a barbecue.
Yes.
That's right.
And this great rooftop deck. And I remember seeing you from afar, and this is audio, so we'll have to post a picture of Susanna. But Susanna is very cool, very fashionable.
Always.
She has sleeve tattoos, and it was summer. And so I just saw you from afar and was like, this woman is cool. I was like, this is a cool lady who's joining our team. And now here we are, I don't know, 6 years later. So past me would have been very impressed that you were here and that on our podcast.
Look how far we've come.
Yeah.
I feel like every place that I work, I take at least one or two friends with me, and you stay friends outside of work. And it's like so nice when that happens. I think it can be a tricky transition that you've both talked about on the pod before. But yeah, I'm so grateful that we all became friends and that that lasted longer than our stints at any business.
For sure.
Yeah.
One other thing that I remember about you is I didn't interview you at the company that we all worked together, but I know, but my colleagues who did, I just remember that you talked about, you made fun of the book Lean in your interview. And that was like something that everyone came back to the team and was like, oh my gosh, it was so hilarious. She was just making fun of how stupid Lean In is.
Lean out. That's
yeah. The theme of this pod, and I right? was like, I was loving that because I was just like, I feel like this is a little spicy for an interview. And it just always cracked me up. So I never forgot that.
That's so funny. Yeah. Wow. That was pre-pandemic tech. They were really treating us so well. That was like after your final interview, you would be like invited to a lunch, you know.
Yes.
It would be like, okay, I guess I got it, and they're trying to impress me. Like, I don't know how to take this. Are they seeing how I act socially? Like, are they observing me?
Totally. That actually reminds me of that same job, my final interview with the CEO. They invited me to the roof, which I think this was like their way that they wooed
their
people.
Selling point.
And they like served me wine, and I was like, oh my god, do I accept the wine, do I not? And I did, but I like sipped it very slowly because I was like, this is an interview with the CEO and I'm drinking wine. But just a totally different time in yeah. tech. And
it was such a different time.
Yeah.
The glory days.
The glory days.
Yeah, now it's all just shit.
Yeah.
So excited that you're here. And I think we brought you on because I think one of the things that we, you know, talked about a lot in season one was just like our relationship with work and just kind of like examining that. And so we've heard, you know, our relationship with work is a bit fraught. But you, Susanna, I think on the other hand, have always just been like so much more balanced about your view of work and have just had much more of a healthy approach. And we've always been like, we wish we could be more like Susanna. And so that's what we wanted to bring you on. So like you could kind of impart some of your wisdom and sort of tell us like, how have you managed to have a much healthier balance with work? So to kind of kick things off, would love to just kind of hear, like, tell us a little bit about your career. Where did you start? Where are you now? Kind of catch us up on your history.
Sure. So I will say that my attitude about work is definitely underlined by a life as an underachiever. I have never strived to achieve. It's really the end goal. Like even, you know, high school, college, I was like, I don't care what my GPA is. I don't care about my grades. I just want to graduate. And my parents were always like, you're not applying yourself. You're not, you know, living up to your potential. And it was like, they really had no response when I told them, no one's ever going to know what my GPA was as long as I finish, right? They had to kind of admit that that was true. So it's always been a means to an end. But career-wise, I graduated actually with a degree in design and merchandising from Drexel. So that was really fashion merchandising, like store dressing, the psychological tricks that you use in retail to get people to buy more or to like navigate a store, branding, that kind of thing. Before I was even done at college, I knew I didn't want to work in fashion or that industry. But I was like, I'm too deep in it now. Let me get this degree and like hopefully it won't matter. So after that, I graduated probably like y'all, 2012-ish. It was not a good economy to find a job in. I was in Philadelphia at the time. A lot of my friends in college were like moving up and moving out. And I felt like, let me, you know, start over. So I went to Austin, Texas, and I was working at a Buffalo Exchange. I was that girl that rejects your stuff and is like, don't want it. That was me.
You are the cool girl. I know. The shame and embarrassment I have going to a Buffalo Exchange because they're like, no. And they won't take a single piece.
Exactly why and all of like the training that goes into that. But anyway, I was working there and I was like kind of had a background a little bit in like vintage. And long story short, I met a guy down there. We got engaged very quickly. He wanted to go back to New York. And so I went with him because I was had not been successful in finding like what we would call a quote unquote real job in Austin. And he wanted to go back to Hudson, New York and buy a house, essentially. And he was like, you know, we don't have to live in it full time. I just want to use this investment while I have it. I want to get property. And like, I'm not going to be able to do that in the city. So I had no job, so I had nowhere to be. So I moved up there with him. And while we were moving there, we were driving around downtown Hudson, and I saw that Etsy had a giant office there. And I was like, that's so weird. I would have never known that. I knew about the Brooklyn office, obviously, but I didn't know about Hudson. And I thought, wow, I bet the competition is way slim up here. I'm going to apply to something in this office. And I got it. And it was an entry level, what they used to call marketplace integrity. And it was basically like making sure that things that were listed on the website were what they said they were. So I was looking for things that were listed as vintage that were not vintage or listed as, you know, policing the marketplace. And I liked that. But the more that I stayed there, I started doing things we would call like risk operations. So more fraud, more things like merchant fraud, straight up like spam and scam. And I was like, I love this because I love scams. So like I love to put myself in the seat of the scammer. And like then I was like, I'm actually into this. And I thrived on that type of work. I stayed there for a while. And then I moved on to other opportunities. Actually, the very next one was where I met you guys. I was like a one-person team there. That was really challenging, but learned a lot. And then at that point, I really wanted to manage. So I went somewhere a little bigger. I got to like build my own team. And then I realized I actually really like managing because I don't care about making a company money or workflow efficiencies. It's not really motivating, but I do care that like people that deserve it are getting recognition. They're getting more money. Their lives are better. So I was like, oh, this is actually something I could care about. And yeah, I've been kind of managing trust and safety teams ever since. But it was really an accident that I fell into this strange niche, you know?
Yeah, I feel like that's, I think we hear this a lot, right? People start in one field, but then they just kind of like stumble upon something else. I absolutely love that you're like, I'm an underachiever.
Proud.
Self-proclaimed. Yeah.
I will do the least amount of work for the end result.
I respect that. And also I feel like one of the things I loved about you is because now there's such a narrative about like anti-capitalism and like we don't want our companies to be successful and we don't want to just like serve them as a way for them to make more profits. But I feel like you've been saying that for years.
The pandemic was a game changer. So pre-pandemic, I went to work with this attitude every day of my life. And one of my friends at Etsy, actually, who I'm still really close with, she did too. And we were really the minority. Like people were not talking about this. It was the girl boss era. It was the wing era. Mm-hmm. Like everybody was like, we're making ourselves sound so much more professional than we are. And you know, she and I were just kind of like, this is whack. Like I'm here to get paid and leave at 4:59, you know, like I'm out. And it was interesting, the pandemic, like that really changed people's views because they realized how disposable they were, you know, when it was no longer in the interest of the company, which is something that I've always known. Like I don't trust in organizations. So that was interesting because then all of a sudden people were really coming around to my team and being like, wait, I'm like not going to be at my computer if I'm not in a meeting, you know? And I was like, wow, this is a real sea change. But honestly, I'm thankful for it because I think that was really needed.
You got to welcome people to the light. You were one of the OG voices.
Yes. And now my take is the popular one.
Absolutely.
It's interesting hearing you identify as an underachiever, though, because you really have achieved quite a lot. And I think we have a question about this a little bit further down, but almost by having that attitude, I wonder if it's helped you because you identify as an underachiever, but what you've achieved is quite a bit. So do you see a tension in that?
I think like you, everybody has their own moral or personal or like value set. And I think like that doesn't always translate to a corporate environment or a social environment. And I think like at the end of the day, you can really only please yourself. And like, am I happy with what I did? Like, I definitely have pride in my work. Like, I definitely don't like want to do a shitty job. I just feel like really strict about the amount of energy that I'm going to give to a workplace versus like other areas of my life. Like, I kind of feel like those things always come first because jobs really, they come and go. And none of us would be like choosing probably to do the kind of work we do if we didn't need to make money.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I think it's like if you're doing something that you would do, whether it made you money or not, there's probably more pride in that area. And I think it's beautiful when it aligns for people. Like I do know some proud girl bosses that are like, I really believe in what I'm doing. I don't think that's most, but I think that's some. And for those people, I say like, I applaud you, you know, that that's what it is for you. But for me, there's never really been like a marriage of I'm getting paid to do what I love. Like that's not something that I've necessarily experienced in my day yet.
Maybe one day.
Yeah. Well, and I think what's so refreshing for me about your perspective, Susanna, is that like it lets you off the hook a bit. When we were all working together and during that kind of like booming time of like tech companies.
Yeah, I was a different environment.
Yeah. And it was very much like do what you love and you need to be really behind the mission.
Well, what's also interesting about that time, and that's like really, I feel like when we were sliding into late capitalism, but it was like that last hurrah, was not only were you expected to have a side hustle to like kind of round out your interest as a person, you were also expected to monetize that. And that's something I really don't understand. Like for me, like whatever the art that I'm making that I'm keeping to myself, like I don't care if I make money off of it. And in some ways, I think that trying to monetize it would ruin what it is for me. But there was such a pressure for that. It was like, not only should you have hobbies and like things that you do for self-development outside work, but like you need to be making money off of those things too.
Right, right. There's no value unless you're able to monetize.
I wonder, too, if that detachment, because I was thinking about this as it relates to how I felt about my career. And I think especially when we all worked together, I was very invested. I was very attached to my work as indicative of my self-worth.
Yes.
And I don't think it always served me in making me better at my job because often that could look like overanalyzing an email I was sending or overthinking the work I was doing as opposed to if I had a little bit of a healthier detachment. This is one email. I'm going to send it. I'm going to read it once. And then I'm going to be done with it. And it's not going to be better if I angst over it for 20 minutes. And to go back to how much you've done in your career, I wonder if you've seen that as almost a superpower, that because you care a little bit less, you're able to be better at what you do.
I think it's just I've never seen work and before work school as part of my identity. Like my performance there doesn't make me feel like I'm in no way tied to it. I don't like define myself by it. Like even really small things, like I would never put where I work in my Instagram bio. I would never do that. Like it's not.
I had an era when I did that.
I think that was really popular at the era we're talking about. Yeah. It was like, this is what I do. This is who I am. Yeah. And I was like, I've just never identified that way. So I think that that can be freeing. I think people that do identify with their work, maybe in different industries or where they're like kind of defining what that means for them, like owning their own business or, you know, I think that can absolutely be different because that's like, yes, this thing did come out of my identity. But like for jobs like what we're talking about, you know, I definitely don't feel that way.
It's also interesting because I was going to ask you if you've always felt this way. And it sounds like, I mean, if you felt this way even in school, why do you think it's something? Yeah. Like, how do you think you developed that?
I think it's just natural. Like, I think it's just part of who just I your, am.
This is just like how your natural personality developed. Was there, I know we've talked about family dynamics and stuff on the podcast before too, but do you think that you got this influence from your family or your sibling or?
You know, I wonder about that a lot. So I have an older sister. She is polar opposite of me. Super, super career driven, super identifies with work. Like, that's where her self-worth comes from, and like her validation as a person. And she's admitted this to me. And I think that makes her a really hard worker, but I also see the way that it's like run her down over time. Especially, you know, it can be an uphill battle, especially if like you're a woman in a male-dominated industry, you know. But yeah, it's interesting. I think like obviously we had grew up with the same parental dynamics. And I will say like my parents were supportive, but like they never really gave me a lot of validation at all. So I think that can go one of two ways. And with my sister, it went like, I will prove myself no matter what, and I will get that validation from whoever I can get it from. And I'll pour that into work because like me, she also likes money, Capricorn. whereas for me, I was like, kind of don't need it now. Like, I don't need external validation. And that is a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing because I think a lot of people do things for that and I'm not motivated by it. And it's a curse because when I do get validated, I don't really know what to do with it. Mm. So that's kind of like where it landed for me, where I was like, I'm not going to play this game. And, you know, her response to like our parents' attitudes about work was like, I'm going to play the game so hard. But they were both very career driven. My parents both always worked, talking about corporate dynamics at the dinner table. Like, I grew up hearing about that everywhere.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah, I do think you make a great point of like, if you, because I feel like I didn't get validated either as a child because having a big family. But yeah, I think I went your sister's route of being like looking for people to be like, yeah, see me, recognize me. But again, that's something I just really respect about you, is that you're like, you know, it sounds like you just find it from within. Like, you're just like, I don't need outside people to tell me that I'm like worthy, which I love.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the thing that makes me worthy or like feel worthy is like I'm living according to my own values, you know, and not other people's. And I think there's like a lot of strength to be derived from that if you know what those values are.
So we've kind of already touched on it a little bit, but the place that the three of us worked together and how we met, we know was like very big on culture. And we've also talked about this on the pod a lot.
I also just want to point out that I think one of the reasons why it's so refreshing to have you on, Susanna, is Mary and I were on the culture committee at this workplace.
You guys tried so hard.
I know.
It's like kind of pathetic.
No, it's like so pure. And they didn't deserve it. But like, wow, at the effort, you know?
And so that's why we need this perspective.
Exactly.
Sorry, Mary, continue.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I'm just kind of curious too, like everything was about being a team player. Did you feel like, and maybe at that workplace or other workplaces you've been, like, did you feel like your perspective or outlook was kind of at odds, and sort of how do you approach that when I remember you were like, I don't want to go to this holiday party. Like, I'm not interested in this game night. And I'm like, come join the, like be a part of it. And she's like,
snacks. But you guys got me there because then we became friends. And yeah. I'm like, well, I have to support them.
Yeah. So, how do you look like, feel like you approach that with this attitude that you have of like, I just want to clock off and I'm like, I'm done.
That stuff is hard. I think like we were saying, post-pandemic in the remote world, it's much easier to skip out on those things. And so that has kind of been a blessing. I think like the team player stuff, I definitely would never like be so careless that somebody else would get left with like something I didn't do. And I definitely really care about the people that work for me, like getting rewarded. So that's kind of like where I focus my like team player energy at. But it is weird to look back on that time from the standpoint of like 100% remote work, because it feels like there is just, that doesn't exist anymore. Like, it's really sad, but the place I work now, I feel like the most fun we have is like in the chat during an all hands meeting. Like, that's how like bleak it is in terms of like culture and like what can be offered when you have like a distributed team. It's like, wow, this is where we're like, we're in the group chat right now, you know, like that's like the fun part. Yeah, I mean, I think you do have to do some of that stuff. Like, I do say yes to, you know, things I don't want to do all the time that are like, because somebody on my team is like making an effort. But in my heart of hearts, like, no, I don't want to. You know, the forced socialization, like the forced fun, whew, that is hard.
Yeah,
that's tough.
I used to live for that stuff. And now I'm just so like, I'm like, oh, I don't. Smaller groups, but like a big. Like a part, yeah. I don't know. It's not. So I'm also
retreats,
fortunate.
Retreats, offsites. Company.
Oh yeah, we've touched on retreats before.
I mean, that's a social nightmare. It's a nightmare.
Yes. And when you have to share a bedroom,
you've had a retreat in the last few years.
Yes, a retreat actually at a place that is fully remote. So it was like had been there for almost a year, and then was finally meeting all these people in person all at once.
Oh, interesting.
Which was very strange.
Was it heavy on the like work activities or like social activities?
It was weird. It was a weird one. It wasn't really heavy on anything. There was like a lot of free time. And it was like, why did we all get flown out here for this? There's also no real like public address to the company. Like there was a speaker. Our new chairman of the board came and spoke. There were a couple activities and like a couple of lectures. And that was kind of it. So it was a little odd. Hmm. You know, it was okay. It definitely wasn't as like we're all going to play this game together. You know, like it wasn't as tightly organized, which I guess is a good thing. But it did feel weird. Like it felt like, why am I here?
Yeah, it's like, why are they spending so much money on something where everyone's just going to like hang out?
Like also, like, let's be real. Those things are fun when you like the people you work with.
Yeah.
Mm. And when you don't know them or don't feel comfortable about them, then it feels like kind of torturous. You know, totally. I grew to enjoy our workplace stuff. You can edit that. because I actually felt like I was friends with a lot of you, and that made it fun.
For sure.
Sounds like the organizers of this retreat did not read Priya Parker's The Art of Gathering for an intentional gathering.
And maybe they should have.
I was, as you were talking, Suzanne, it reminded me of an amazing activity that the company we all worked at together did do that. I think different people on the culture committee led a day and then everyone could sign up for the day.
Oh, that was fun.
My group was definitely the introvert group because my day I chose, we did a yoga class.
Yes.
And then everyone got, I think, like $25 to go to a bookstore.
Oh, that was the best day. I was like, this is perfect.
Yes, and it was great because we were doing it together, but it was also, you know, a yoga class. You're not chatting, a bookstore. And I remember some of the engineers who came with us, you know, they were probably making so much money and they didn't want to get a book. So I think you and I each got two books and I was like, amazing team building activity.
Yes.
Got to go to a yoga class, got to go to a bookstore, got free books out of it. Like best.
Yes. Stuff. Yes. That's great.
Oh my God. Minimal talking.
Ideal recipe. Maybe we got lunch. I don't. Yeah. Okay. Maybe we had to talk at lunch. But other than that, it was pretty solo.
Yeah. An activity where you don't have to talk is good. It's very exhausting to like be around a table with 20 adults and be focused on making conversation. I really used to hate the new hire lunches, especially when it was my hire, because then I felt responsible for like this going well. And like, I don't have birthday parties. I'm an earth sign. Like, I don't want to be like trying to meet a certain expectation of like if people are having fun. Like, that gives me the most anxiety. So I hated those because I always felt like, oh, I hope this goes well. I hope there's no weird lulls in conversation. And then it would also be like, you know, me and like a bunch of dudes that are basically like finance tech bros. And like, they don't care. They're going to go get their $25 lunch and they're going to say zero words. So I'm like, oh, now I feel like I'm on a date. Like I have to now carry this conversation for like
the emotional burden
it's
of it.
So that stuff is the worst. That is the worst.
I remember one time I went on one of those like lunches or something and it was the CEO was part of my group and he literally brought sheets of paper with questions on them, put them in a bowl at the center of the table at a restaurant.
No.
And then it was so awkward because like I am more outgoing and there was like one other outgoing person, but then it was like more introverted people and then him being super awkward, pulling the questions out and all of us going around answering the question, and I was just like, oh my God.
And you get stuck like, how am I managing performance? Yeah. Like, why is this happening?
And my favorite ice cream flavor is mint, but on weekends, sometimes I have peanut butter chocolate chip.
Oh God.
Like a long high top table with those bar stools that you can't even see the person that's at the end. Yeah. You're like, I hope they can hear us.
Oh, I am the person in any situation who's like, when someone asks a question, I feel bad for the person and I'm just like, oh, I'll offer something. But then same. I'm like, oh God, then I'm just the person who always answers the question. And then I feel lame. So I'm trying not to do that as
it's
much.
It's hard.
It is. Because you're like, I feel the awkwardness setting in.
Yeah, sometimes you also want to just say like, can we all agree that it would just be more enjoyable to sit in silence and eat? And let's just
throw that out there. Radical. And I promote it.
Yeah, I do think you know you're in a – like you have a, you're at a good place within a friendship or a relationship when you can just literally sit in silence. Like, just, let's just sit on the couch and not talk. Or like, we're in a car and like, we don't have to like have a full on conversation.
So Suzanne, if you were thinking about interviewing with a company, are there certain signs you look for a workplace that will complement what you're looking to get out of a job?
That's a good question. I pay attention to the organization of the interview process. I get really turned off when there's like something, a fly in the ointment, if you will. Like, I think it's a bad sign when like the recruiter's disorganized or like they cancel on you and reschedule. I just think that leaves a bad taste in my mouth because it's like you're not already not respecting my time and you're supposed to be like courting me. So I definitely pay attention to those things. I think some of it is forgivable, but like sometimes that stuff really kind of like bothers you and you think like, okay, why is this happening? So I would say that. I would also say like the kind of people that you're meeting with, and I don't mean like their roles, but like, did they come prepared? Did they come to have a conversation with you? Is there a vibe? I feel like if there's no vibe, that's always kind of like a bad sign. Like out of everyone you meet with, I feel like there should be at least one person where you're like, I could have a non-awkward lunch with this person. That's really the bar I'm trying to clear.
The litmus test.
Yeah. So I think that is, that stuff is like maybe earlier signs that you could gauge. But I also love, you know, and people feel a different way about this because it's all your activity is visible. But I love a good like LinkedIn stalk, you know, like who is this person? Like, where did they come from? Do they have any non-work stuff that they're advertising or that they're alluding to? And like, what is that stuff like? What does that say about like work-life balance? And if people like have a life outside of their job?
Yeah, that's actually a really good one. That's not really something I've thought about.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever approached
it. Again, I feel like you are living this like value of you're interviewing them, which is like what everyone always says, right? The advice of like, don't forget you're interviewing them too. And I'm like, no, I'm just over here like trying to like desperately convince them to hire me.
Anything from this podcast recording, my number one piece of advice is to act too good for the role. Like it is like dating. You want to prove that you're high worth. If you're high worth, you don't respond to everyone. I never send thank you notes after interviews. I'm too busy. That's what I'm telegraphing.
That is such a take.
I'm playing video games. Let's be real. I can't return your email, okay? I'm not going to say thank you. Like, you should be thanking me for showing up and giving 4 hours of my time. And if you want me, I'll wait and I'll hear from you. I do think there's an element of, like, acting in demand that is crucial. And I've told people that are also trying to break into technology, which doesn't apply to either of you, but you know, if you're in that, you're trying to get that first role, like I really think being too earnest is a death sentence. Being too earnest and also being too giving with your time. Like some people I've talked to are like, these companies are asking them to go on 5, 6, 7 interviews. If there's more than 4, I say, I'm not interested in continuing. If you want me, let me know. Otherwise, I can't spend any more time on this.
Wow.
And it is radical. It really, really works. I'm telling you, like it really works. It's, I have options, you know, that's what you're trying to telegraph.
So it's just so different than my approach. I like finish the interview and I'm like drafting the thank you note already.
100%.
How can I customize this to show that we should actually pull back up the email I sent Mary after the interview at our first company. I was like, I went on the blog and read some of your articles.
Well, look, if you're looking for work and you're applying to a bunch of jobs, it's kind of a great opportunity to like A/B test this, right? True. Like some of them you could like, okay, let me do what I would normally do. And then some of them it's like, what if I act like so cold and so unreachable? What effect will that have? And it's gotten me a job every single time.
To our listeners out there, give it a try.
Wow. Let's try. I get like being risk averse, especially if like you don't have a ton of interviews, but like let's say, you know, you're throwing those resumes out there and you have like, you know, 6, it's something to consider.
We can't guarantee the results, but talk to Susanna if it doesn't work out.
I also think, you know, you do kind of know when you're in an interview process. Of course, you never know what the end result's going to be, but you do start to get the vibe that like, oh, they do like me. I I don't like take your advice. I've never taken your advice, and maybe in the future I will. But I do feel like you can start to kind of know, like, especially I definitely have done a thing where, you know, they'll be like, oh, are there any other interviews we need to know about? And I'm like, yeah, I'm in conversations.
Always with- say there are. No matter if there are. Yes. You're in other interviews and you have a firm deadline.
I've definitely used that one.
Have to.
But I'm also very much of the camp of like, what's my thank you email going to say? And how do I perfectly time it? Like, when do I send it at the perfect
time? I mean, the timing is crucial because I think waiting long enough, you can get away with it. But I feel like too fast is.
Right. You don't want to seem desperate.
Right. Because like I don't know about you, and you've all hired people as well as I have. I can smell desperation. And I know that it's not that they want this role. It's that they want a job. Right. So it's like that is always less appealing than a candidate that's like, no, this is the right job for me for these reasons, you know? And if it's not the right job, then I'm happy to leave it. You know, I think that really, that like is an energy. And it doesn't mean you can't like be nice in the interview and like vibe with people and like have a nice conversation and like laugh. I make jokes all the time. Like I show my personality. I think people in this industry respect you more if they think that your time is valuable and if they think that you're in demand. And people fake this all the time, like all the time.
Should we be setting up a different email and say, like, to the interviewer, like, oh, well, you can email my scheduling assistant and I'll be able
honestly,
to
see if that's I can next edit level. Let's take the scam next level because that is potentially brilliant. And I might have to steal that one.
God, a lot of like life lessons here, man. Uh-huh. I have a lot of improvements for my next interview round.
I know I'm rethinking a lot of emails I sent over the past month. It is interesting your point about energy, though. Earlier this month, I think it was the new year energy, I was feeling really good and I had to email a bunch of people. And I was shocked by the number of people that responded the next day. And then a few days ago, I was in a bit of a slump. I had to send out a bunch of emails again. And the responses have really not come in. And I was thinking, I was like, I wonder if there's something when I sent out this earlier batch of emails, the energy that I was putting out, that I was sending that. Them with, versus this more recent batch where I wasn't feeling as good. I don't know. I think it can just seep into what you're thinking, how you're writing does. It. And more, I just have been, I don't know, I just think there's so much about energy and also how the approach you're talking about, too, is how you're feeling about yourself and how you're respecting yourself. And I think that also probably comes across in an interview and also how you're then feeling and that's really valuable as opposed to, just like being too desperate. I don't know if desperate's the right
word. Desperate's not the right word. I think like transparent, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like I do think that energy is absolutely felt. And like I've done this when I've had no job and absolutely nothing on the horizon. Like I'm faking it. Like it's a full fake it till you make it energy. Like there's nothing realer than that advice. Like I'm performing. Like it's a performance. Like I am an actress right now. Like this is not like I know that I'm probably not their most qualified candidate. I definitely know I'm not going to work as hard as some of the other candidates, but like, what if I act like I was going to? Like, really, I think of it as a role, and I think that can be helpful for compartmentalizing as well. But I do think energy is like felt through emails, through notes, and you know, this is another reason why like I really hate the era of that we're in of like ChatGPT and all of this, because I'm reading these cover letters and I know that they just bippity bopped it and I can't even get a sense of their personality anymore, you know. And so that is like a hard thing to read now too.
Yeah, reason to just get rid of cover letters because they're pretty much bullshit anyway.
And it's weird how they really do affect your response. Like I do feel like when I include one, I get a higher rate of responses. And I know that it probably wasn't even read. They were just like, oh, they included a cover. You
know? Yeah. I know. I've got like one and I just like modify it slightly every single time.
Yeah. Who does it?
Do you manifest, Susanna? Do you believe in manifestation?
I'm trying to get into it a little bit more.
Okay.
I wouldn't say that I'm like a firm believer necessarily, but I definitely have some capacity for the woo-woo in me. I feel like I was doing a really good job of it, actually, in 2023. And I think I kind of fell off of it towards the end of the year. But the beginning of 2023, I really was, I was kind of hitting it hard, you know. And it's small changes. It's hard to stick with it. But, like, instead of saying things like, if I finish my book and sell it, I say, when I finish my book and sell it and get it optioned for an HBO series, right? Like, these are the this is the way that I'm trying to talk to myself. A little DeLulu is the Salulu, you know?
Yeah. I mean, this is, I feel like this is a perfect segue because actually we wanted to, you know, we know that you are doing a lot of stuff outside of your work. And I know that's a struggle for a lot of people, is just like finding the time and like committing to something outside of work. But yeah, tell us a little bit about like what you're pursuing. You already gave a little hint.
Here's the good and the bad. The good is that there is absolutely a way to do it all. The bad news is that when you have the time, you discover that a lack of time is not the problem. And that's a much harder thing to get over. So I have been working at a 4-day-a-week workplace for the last like year and a half. So I've had every Friday off, which is crazy. And, you know, I think you go into an opportunity like that with the best of intentions. Like, oh, Fridays, I'm going to work on my book because that's what I'm working on. I'm working on a fiction novel. And that you realize, like, time is not necessarily the blocker. The blocker is, like, the fear of failing. The blocker is the fact that you have to actually practice to get good at the thing and you're not just good at it right away. You know, that's the stuff you really want to run into. I feel like you can make the time. You know, I'm also a big fan of working on your personal projects on the clock. Like, I'm going to get paid to do that. Period. Generally, when I was really in a workshop and I was like working on my first draft of this book, I was like spending 2 hours of the day in the morning before my job because I want to spend my energy on that. That's more important. Like the work I could do with my eyes closed. Like this is really where I need my brain to be fresh. So I think, you know, the whole like eat the frog first thing, I think there's some truth to that. Yeah, now I'm in a different struggle where it's like, it's not the lack of time. It's the pain of creation. You know, like, which I'm sure everyone can relate to in some way or another.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that you're like, this is important to me and I'm going to use my energy when I feel like the most, I don't know, fresh or in the right mindset to be like, let me do this first. Because, I mean, if the work gets done, the work gets done, right?
That's like, how I feel at the end of the day. Like, I don't think you need to spend every minute of work doing work if your end result is sufficient, you know? And think about all, like, the little half hours between meetings that you don't get anything done. You're clicking around in tabs, you know what I mean? So if you can develop, and I'm not saying I've developed this yet. I'm still working on this. But if you can develop, like, a real discipline to be able to switch back and forth between, you have all the time in the world. It's just like, that's a really hard thing to do. And I'm definitely still trying to figure out how to do that effectively.
Mm-hmm. That really resonates with me because in the creative work that I've tried to do, when I haven't had as much time, I've told myself like, oh, well, if I had more time,
yes,
I would do this. If I had more time, I would get so much done. I'd get so many pages written. And then you have the time and you magically fill it up with going to get coffee or, you know, reading the news. And then all of a sudden this time you had that you've dreamed of and you've told yourself, yes, oh, if I had 6 uninterrupted hours, I would get so much done. And so it does force you to come up with, okay, like what's really going on here? And I think there's also power in constraints.
Yes.
And that when you, if you have 2 hours in the morning and you know that it, you know, 10 a.m. you have a meeting, that can actually drive you to get more done than if you have an entire day.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think that can be really valuable to remember when you are juggling a full-time job with a more creative pursuit and can be really powerful in helping you get to that end point as opposed to just, oh, if I had every single day to work on this, it would all fall into place. And it's like, no.
Yeah. And I think it also depends on the type of pursuit. Like there are certain things that have more obvious steps and there are certain things that don't. And I think, you know, to get back to your point about manifestation, something I've realized in a lot of writing workshops is like, I have a very feminine process. I'm not the kind of person that can sit down and write 500 words a day. I can, but when I look back and read them, I don't like them. So what I've also learned is, like, I'm not going to be a Stephen King, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit down at my computer for 4 hours a day and write, like, 2,000 words. I need to be feeling it, and I need to be inspired. And, you know, in addition to the book I'm working on, I've had a Substack for a few years now. And when I started...
Thought Deli. If you want to subscribe, it's great.
ThoughtDeli.substack.com. You know, when I started that, I was like, I got to write one every month, you know. And what I really did that for was not necessarily to, like, have it take off or monetize it. It was, I just wanted a website, a link to go have, like, a repository of my writing in case I wanted to submit pieces online, because they're always like, oh, you know, do you have a website? Have you been published before? And I'm like, well, at least now you can go read a bunch of essays I've written and, like, get a sense of the flavor. That was really what I did. But over time, you know, I found myself like, okay, I'm really scraping the bottom of the barrel for something I want to talk about, or I don't feel that, like, fire of, like, I'm so annoyed by this and I must write about it. And that for me is, like, where I do my best work. So now I've gotten to a place with it, both the book and the Substack, where I'm like, if I'm not, like, hyper fixating on this because it's bothering me so much, I'm not writing about it, you know? And if I don't write one for, like, 3 months, then so be it, because I care more about its quality when it comes out. But it's like, cool, I have a link if somebody wants to read my work. But yeah, I think learning how you work, like, more type A people can really thrive with, like, I have these 2 hours. And, like, I wish I was more like that sometimes, because I do have the time. It's just, like, sometimes I don't know what I'm feeling passionate about. Sometimes I'm not feeling passionate about anything. And that's kind of the hardest times.
Yeah, I think one of the things that has come out of this entire conversation is just, like, you being really in tune with who you are and your own value system, and just, like, aligning yourself with, like, and doing things and spending your time with things that align with your value. And, you know, not trying to force yourself to be something that you're not, which is something I've really always loved about you. And I think that comes up, right, with, like, you writing a book, like, your attitude toward work, your being an underachiever, like, all of that just feels like you're just being very much like who you are. And I really appreciate that.
And the two of you, I find it really inspiring the way that you step out of your comfort zone and you try things that, like, you're maybe like, I don't know if this is aligned with me, but I'm going to try it. Like, I find myself much more rigid in that. And I would like to be more flexible. Like, I think that's also admirable, where it's like, I don't know if this is me, but, like, let me try it and see. You know, you've both tried so many different things, like, really thrown your hat into a ring on a lot of stuff. And I'm also like, that's something I want to do more.
Aww. I appreciate that. Yeah. Yeah.
I also just want to say, it's making me laugh because here Susanna starts and she's like, yeah, I'm an underachiever. Yeah, so I have a director level job at a tech company and I'm writing a book. It's like, anybody, yeah, real underachiever over here.
And she has a Substack.
I mean, the Substack's been, she's dead right now, but she's gonna rise again.
But go back and read the old issues, because there's so many good ones.
And great title, Thought Deli.
Oh, thank you.
I like that. Okay, Susanna, we love your healthy attitude towards work. And I've been taking a lot of notes. I have a lot of things to try. And
so many things.
We love a good petty work story. So before we let you go, we want to have some work tea for us.
I have so much material.
Which one do you choose?
The juiciest one we talked about right before I got here. And I won't go into detail, but I'll just give you the bare bones, which was, I had a work disagreement about trust and safety, like, truly about, like, the ins and outs of my job, with a CEO who did not have a trust and safety background. They were, you know, poking a lot of holes, bringing up a lot of things that didn't make sense. And I had to really stand my ground, and I did make an enemy. And what's wild about this is that this CEO, after a work disagreement, completely not personal, disconnected me on LinkedIn, while remaining connected to every other person who works at the company, like, very pointed, and blocked not only me, but my dog on Instagram, even though I was never following them.
That takes some work. I don't even know how to disconnect.
Yeah. That truly is, okay,
this so is many who's leading companies. Like, just so, like, questions. When you're on LinkedIn and you're seeing these, like, thought leader posts, and these people have, like, 2,000 followers, and, like, it's gibberish. Like, please know that these are the people that are talking about, like, kindness in the workplace and, like, treating people well. Like, they're blocking their own employees that they don't like. Just know that.
That is so incredibly immature. And also, yeah, it doesn't surprise me because I often see those LinkedIn posts of like people trying to be influencers on LinkedIn.
They get invited to panels to talk about and you're
like this can't be real.
Yeah. And they're on panels talking about like how you like build trust in the workplace while they're doing these things in the darkness.
Yeah. I feel like this is, I mean, some of them have come out. I feel like we're only going to see more and more of these. You know, will get exposed. I hope.
What strikes me about it is just the effort it takes to go and disconnect from someone on LinkedIn. And this is a CEO of a company who probably has other things to be doing. I don't even know how to disconnect from someone on LinkedIn. Like, I don't think
it's not that easy. Also, like, for me, I'm so petty that I would never do something visible like that because I would never want that person to know I cared enough to do it. Like the fact that you like navigated to my profile and did that is like embarrassing, you know, like I just would never do that. I'm not a vengeful person. I'll say that, like, for all the petty work drama, like I'm really not vengeful. Like I truly believe that like the trash takes itself out and you don't really have to do anything, you know, it all comes true in the end.
Love
keep it. Receipts, but you know, I'm never going after anybody.
Are you a Swiftie, Susanna?
I am an anti-Swift.
Oh, but she said, okay, I think you just quoted her.
I know. The karma.
No, that was not a direct quote.
She gave an interview to Time Magazine. I'm pretty sure she said trash takes it. Or maybe Taylor Swift quoted Susanna.
I think that's definitely what it is.
She read Thought Deli.
Because Susanna would never quote Taylor Swift.
I know, that's why I was surprised.
But you know, I might agree with her every once in a while. No, that really goes back to our first question. I've always been anti-good girl, pro-bad girl. I love the villain. I always root for the villain. So, like, Taylor Swift's a goody two-shoes, so she's never been of interest to me. I'm an Arianator.
This is another just, like, stark difference between you and I, Susanna.
Yeah, no, I love a bad girl. I need a horny pop star. Like, I need a bad amoral.
Oh my God, we could do an entire episode on like your pop culture knowledge too. I feel like if I ever need to know anything, I just like text you and you're like, oh yeah, this whole thing happened. I'm like,
I mean, there's been movers and shakers in this very podcast room. I've come to find out.
Amazing. Well,
thank you for sharing that petty story with us, Susanna.
It's fun.
The
irony is that those kinds of interpersonal dramas, that's what gets me invested. Like, I'm never more invested at work than when I'm having a beef with someone.
I guess it keeps it interesting.
It does keep it interesting. Like, I crave that adrenaline and excitement.
We do need that. It was the Wall Street Journal, actually, funnily enough.
You would quote the Wall Street Journal.
No, but the journal, and I think the headline was something like, why is work no longer fun? And to your point about how the most fun is in the group chat, is that they were saying there isn't as much of that interpersonal. And yeah, you don't want a totally toxic, dysfunctional workplace where it's only that, but that adds a little life. We talked about this in our petty work.
What's the motivation to flex on somebody unless you're like, this person thinks I can't do it? You know what I mean?
Amazing. Okay. Well, this was a fantastic conversation and hilarious, but also I do really think like, I'm just continually impressed by you, Susanna, and just like your attitude and thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
This has been
this
so
was
fun.
Really fun.
Folks, you heard it here. Do not send thank you notes after your interviews.
Truly the hottest take.
My takes on work are hot, you know?
We might have to have you come back. I feel like we just scratched the surface.
Oh, truly. This was so fun.
Yeah, this was awesome.
Everyone's going to have to send in their questions to Susanna.
An additional AMA, maybe on the Instagram.
Oh, okay.
All right.
We'll see. To be continued.
I'm Mary.
I'm Astrid.
And this was a Meet Me by the Dumpster.